Good evening. I'm glad to be here tonight. So glad you're here. So glad those traveling have made it back home. And I'm glad we have some tonight visiting with us. And so glad to see you tonight. You asked me how I'm doing. I'm doing fine. I just couldn't breathe today. I don't know if something in the air or something else, but I'm glad to be here tonight. The lesson won't be too long, though, because I can't breathe. So I guess that's you thankful for that or something? I don't know. I want to tell you tonight, though, about three things atheists get right. Three things atheists get right. Now, first of all, God's people have always been in the learning business. We always want to learn new things, good things, right things. The Bible says in Proverbs 1:7 that fools despise wisdom and instruction, but the heart of the wise and prudent acknowledge God, and the ears of the wise seek knowledge, Proverbs 18:15. So, while fools reject it, those who are wise seek knowledge from God and His Word. And in fact, the ways we look at this are usually from like Psalm 119, talks about how God's words give light, instruction, and knowledge. And we have 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1, that shows us we also seek truth from people who imitate God. Paul says, "Be followers of me as I'm a follower of Jesus Christ." However, we can also learn from those people who are unbelievers. In fact, Jesus tells us in Luke 16, verse 1 through 8, about the parable of the unjust steward. And shows us what the unjust steward did. We can learn that Jesus said, you can take what he did and apply it to your Christian life. So there are things that unrighteous people do that we can learn from and grow from. I think that fits our topic tonight very, very well. Number one, atheists rightly point out how unloving and cowardly it is for Christians to not evangelize those who are lost. I'll say that one more time. Atheists rightly point out how unloving and cowardly Christians are who do not evangelize. Now, as y'all have heard of Penn and Teller, the group, they kind of do illusions and magic, I guess, quote-unquote magic. They've been doing that for decades now. And Penn Jillette, who's a very well-known atheist, very outspoken atheist. In an interview in 2010, he made a five-minute video, of a conversation he had about a kind gentleman who handed him a Bible after one of his shows. Now, in Las Vegas, he's been out there for a long time, and after every show, they try and meet almost everyone in the audience he wants to meet. It's one thing they do that a lot of people don't do. They actually have a line outside, and they try and say, until every last person got a picture or whatever, right? So pretty good to do that. And one person came up and gave Penn Jillette a Bible. He's getting a very outspoken atheist, so giving him a Bible, you think there was some foreknowledge about that. And of this, Penn Jillette said, "I believe he knew that I was an atheist, but he was not defensive, and he looked me right in the eyes. He was really kind and nice and sane and talked with me and then gave me this Bible." And he went on to say this, "I don't respect people who don't evangelize or proselytize. I don't respect that at all," he said. "If you believe that there is a heaven and a hell and people could be going to hell or not getting into eternal life, and you think that's not really worth telling them about because it could make you socially awkward, how much do you have to hate somebody not to tell them?" That comes from an atheist. "How much do you have to hate somebody to believe that everlasting life is not possible and not tell them about that? Not tell them about that if you believe that to be true." Very powerful statement, and it's also a very true statement. He says, listen, if you really believe this exists, how can you not tell somebody about it if you think it's real? The fact is, Jillette was just simply being reasonable and drawing this conclusion. If Christians believe what they say about eternal life and death, Matthew 25:46 tells us, "These shall go away in everlasting punishment, but the righteous unto life eternal," Matthew 25:46, "then they which teach the gospel to others in a kind, loving, Christ-like manner," well, he said, they'll do that. If you believe what Jesus said, you'll teach God's truth. Now, again, I want you to know, I'm not saying those who don't get in the pulpit hate unbelievers. But I'm saying if you have people in your life, friends, coworkers, loved ones, and you don't try and reach out to them in some way, with the gospel, what does it really say about what our faith is in Jesus Christ and our love to our fellow man? I'm not saying you have to take the fisherman. I'm not saying, I got to get my mouth working tonight. I'm not saying you have to take the fisherman course to go to heaven at all, right? I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying back to the Bible is good. You don't have to do that either. But I'm saying if you don't reach out some way to try and reach people for Christ who you know, what's it really say about you and what you think about those people? That's a good point. I know you have to be careful how you apply this point. I get that. That's true. Be careful how you apply the point, but the point is still very valid and applicable in some way. Now, and you can tell me why that's not true after the lesson if you want to. Listen, I always want to learn, and if I'm wrong, I want to know about it. Point number two, atheists correctly call it the hypocrisy of pretend Christianity. But they logically conclude that pretend Christianity justifies reaction of the real thing. In other words, they point out what's fake about certain people being fake about it, but they think that because some people are fake about it, that denies the real thing. Now, that doesn't make sense. Do some Christians pose to be Christian and not really being Christian? Sure, that happens all the time, right? But does that disprove the idea of actually being a real Christian faith? It does not. Atheist by the name of James Veruca, on a website, a very well-known website, said this, dealing with this idea, this atheistic philosophy. He says, we hear an awful lot of conservatives in the Bible Belt about how we should all be living. Certainly a culture that teaches the conservative religious values of the Christian right must have a clean living written all over it. There must be very clean living. And lots of ripe fruit from the morally superior lives abounding. There's some stark in that line, I think. The fact is, many people who call themselves Christians do not walk in the light of the Lord, but sadly stroll in the devil's darkness. True statement. He said, in 2014, 86% of Alabamians claimed to be Christians. In Montgomery, the state's capital of about 200,000 people, a city has over 250 churches. He said, sadly, in 2015, this Christian city, quote-unquote, was statistically crowned the most sexually diseased city in the nation. Most STDs. What's that prove? Proves there are some hypocrites there. But does that disprove there being a real Christian faith? Does that disprove Jesus? It's not wrong for atheists to call out such blatant hypocrisy on the part of many quote-unquote Christians, right? These are quotes there. In fact, they're doing what Christian parents, teachers, and preachers should be doing, pointing out hypocrisy in their own ranks, in their own ranks, right? And so that's what we should be doing is that. We should be pointing out things that are wrong that way. We should be. We shouldn't have come on them to do that for us. No doubt, hypocrisy runs wild among all of Christian America today. And, well, why is that? Again, I use this with quotes. Why is there such hypocrisy in America, American Christian religion? Christian religion, why is there? Well, a couple things. Let me see if this rings true for you. Many churches seem more interested in social gatherings and entertainment than preaching Jesus or sin and salvation. Right? It's more about the social gathering. It's more about the potlucks. It's more about the programs than it is what's right and wrong and there is a God or not God. That's true. That's what people do. They make it into social gatherings rather than Jesus. Number two, most churches appear too politically correct to address specific sin. We can talk about that. We can talk about these cities with all these problems. We can talk about immorality in the church. Oh, we got to talk about other things. Because we ignore it, what happens? It goes unchecked. Is that true or false? We don't talk about it, so it just goes unchecked, so it just goes more and more and more, and we just say, well, I don't know. We just have to love Jesus more. What's that mean? It means talking about things we need to talk about. Jesus came to die, but he lived to do what? He lived to teach. Jesus came to seek and to save that which is lost, Luke 19. But he, when he did, as he's doing that, he came to teach the truth of the gospel. So those point out hypocrisy, that's fine. The church itself should point out hypocrisy and those problems and issues. We see this in 1 Corinthians chapter 5. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, slow down in a second, we have the idea that there were those in the church in Corinth who were not living right. But rather than point out those wrongdoings of those among their own members, Paul points out there, he said, they took joy in it. They come themselves, they glory. The word glory is used in chapter 5, verse 2 of 1 Corinthians. He says, you're puffed up and have not rather mourned that you have done this deed, that you might they may be taken away from you, away from among you. The word glory is not in that verse, it's, I guess, in the verse after that, before that. But the idea is they were puffed up. That they were like, well, we're so big, we love Jesus so much, we won't address the clearly wrong things in our midst, which was in that case was incest. Not hard to condemn that, is it? But they were. They're like, we love Jesus so much, we're so puffed up, we won't address the sin among us that everyone sees. And Paul literally said, even the Gentiles don't do that mess. Y'all do things worse than the heathen, ungodly folk. And he condemned them for it and told them to clean this stuff up. Be right. Be true about it. So the church should be the ones to point out hypocrisy, not the outsiders who see it so clearly in us sometimes. Still, for all hypocrisy among the religious people today, a counterfeit C-note, a $100 bill, does not negate the fact that there is a non-counterfeit $100 bill, right? Just because there's some that are false doesn't mean that there aren't genuine ones. So we have that issue to deal with. Are there fakes out there? Yes. Does the fact there are fakes deny the fact there's true ones out there? No, it does not. For example, Cain, back in the beginning or near the beginning, gave an acceptable sacrifice to God and then murdered his brother Abel. But that, because he did that, though, that doesn't make genuine sacrifice impossible. There was Cain and Abel. Cain offered wrong sacrifice, got really mad about it, killed his brother. That does not deny the fact that there was true sacrifice that Abel offered. And the fact that even Abel got murdered for it doesn't mean that he was wrong, does it? Other people may look at that and say, well, look, Abel got murdered, right? So he did wrong. No, he did right. His brother got mad, though, and he killed him. Just because there was wrongdoing doesn't mean the right was not possible. In fact, look at Judas. Judas' thievery of the money in the bag, or his betrayal of Jesus, does not disprove the fact that there is a true, genuine following of Jesus that others were doing. Just because Judas was false didn't mean Thomas was, or Peter was, or James was. No, they made mistakes, but they were still genuine followers of Jesus. Just one bad apple doesn't mean all of them are false. Right. In fact, what if there were 11 out of 12 bad apples? Would that prove all false? That would prove there were a lot of bad disciples, right? Apostles, but it wouldn't mean all of them are false. It would still mean there is true, genuine faith in Jesus. You can have that, even though many people don't have that. In fact, what do we have today? Matthew 7:13-14, where many seek the broad way that leads toward destruction. What about the narrow way that leads to life, Jesus said? Few there be that find it, the narrow way which leads to heaven. Does that mean there's no way? No, it means there's a way, but it's a straight way. It's a difficult way, and you have to try to be there. You're not going to be on accidentally. You're going to have to find it purposely, right? So the false does not disprove the true. What atheists sometimes point out and say, that's just not right. God condemns hypocrisy in Matthew 5:20. So you got to be more righteous than the Pharisees to enter heaven. But he gives everyone sufficient evidence to know the truth and obey, John 8:32. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free, John 8:32. So I know you can follow Jesus, and he gives you a sufficient truth to do that. God doesn't want us to do guesswork and just march along like good lemmings. He wants to make decisions based on what's right. There's evidence to follow the evidence. We can be true Christians, just like Peter or Paul, like Philip and Phoebe, or like Aquila and Priscilla. Now, number three. Atheists correctly point out the illogical, blind faith of many Christians. Christians, again, in quotes. Those who call themselves Christians. But they fail to realize and acknowledge their own faith system, not Christianity, is based on purely blind faith. Purely blind faith. Atheism is a system of pure blind faith, whereas true Christianity is based on evidence and coming to proper conclusions. Now, many Christians deny that, and they just follow things that their parents tell them just because. But that's not true faith. In his book, The End of Faith, a very prominent atheist called Sam Harris, he addressed the point of this idea of faith, of having evidence and reason. He said this: tell a devout Christian that his wife is cheating on him, or that frozen yogurt can make him invisible, and he will likely require as much evidence as anyone else, and be persuaded only to the extent that you give it, the evidence that is. Tell him that the book he keeps by his bedside was written by an invisible God who will punish him for eternity with fire. He fails to accept its every incredible claim about the universe. He seems to require no evidence of that whatsoever. Now, Sam Harris is quite proud of himself. But what is about Sam Harris's own belief system that has these same problems, or even more problems? Harris's words seem to be accurately describe many Christians, but consider this. Rather than be truth seekers, real truth seekers, many are Christians because of mere feelings, emotions, preferences, or traditions. Is that true? It's true. Many people are baptized into Christ, or at least go through the motions, because they feel like they should, their parents tell them to, or other social pressures. Right? Now, you and I don't see it that way, really, because we see most social pressure today is to not be Christian, right? Most social pressure today is to follow the crowd and do wrong things. Yet you have this still thing that in church camps, for example, sometimes if you have one baptism, you have many baptisms because kids are alone for a week with the people talking about Jesus, and so one person obeys the gospel, and you'll have like 20 kids do it at one time or over the next few days. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm saying, though, sometimes there is like a peer pressure situation that occurs where people will sometimes obey the gospel not because of the evidence or because their hearts are convicted by the truth of God, but because their friends are doing it. We all see that, don't we? As a parent, I do. We've seen it more than once. We've seen it over the years, over the last 20 years or so. And so you have to be careful about that. You can't get someone in the water just emotionally. You have to have them believe that it's the right thing to do based on who God is and who they are and what their accountability is to that God. Not just because of feelings. So atheists call this out. Because people are sometimes say, well, that's how I was raised, or I feel it in my heart, or these things are not reasons to become a Christian. When I was raised, I grew up in a denominational church. It was a Baptist church. The Tabernacle Baptist Church in Whitehall, Illinois. And we were told that when we were asked how we knew Jesus lives, you know what we were told to say? You've heard it before. I know Jesus lives because he lives where? In my heart. I know Jesus lives because he lives in my heart. What that means is, I know Jesus lives because I think he does. I know Jesus exists because I think he exists. That's why I know he does. That and a dollar will buy you a cup of coffee, right? That means nothing. You can say, I know Jesus lives because of the evidence. What do you mean? How about the creation of the universe and creation of the world and human biology and how complex we are and all these things? It points to a maker of us. It can't just be on accident, right? It has to be something more than that. Not just a feeling. Because feelings can betray us. Have you ever worried about something that turned out to be false? Ever do that? If everyone here has, right? You have had a worry about something and you're really worried about it, then that worry proves to be completely unfounded. That means your feelings are wrong, right? Your feelings are wrong about that. I know there's one time when it's happened a few times, but I know one time when the kids were small, I couldn't get away on the weekend very much, and Donna would take the kids to her parents in South Texas, and so we were in Oklahoma at the time, and so she would take the kids, and then go down there for a few days and be with family, as I should, but I couldn't go. There were times I would call her on the way several times because I just had this feeling of dread, like something terrible had happened. I want to make sure she was still alive, not in a mangled wreck on the side of the road or something. I guess she wouldn't answer anyway, right? I just had a feeling of dread that something bad had happened. What had happened? Nothing. Overactive imagination about a worried dad, that's all it was. Our feelings, though, can be false. Our feelings can be false. But now look at this. To claim to be Christian for irrational, feel-good reasons is unreasonable, unbiblical, and unchristlike. Why are we children of God? Because I feel like it. No, that's not a good answer. The fact is, God always expected man to be reasonable, just as the prophets, the apostles, and Jesus Christ were reasonable. 1 Samuel chapter 12, verse 7. Samuel said, "Now therefore stand still, that I may reason with you before the Lord of all the righteous acts of the Lord, which he did to you and to your fathers." What's Samuel say? He said, "Let's reason together." What does Isaiah say? Isaiah 1:18 long ago. "Come, let us reason together. Though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be white as snow." Let us reason about these things. What did Paul say to the Thessalonians chapter in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 21? "Prove all things, hold fast that which is good." What all things? Feel all things. No, prove all things, hold fast that which is good. That word "prove" means logical reasoning. He says you make sure you reason what's right and wrong, and with the things that are right, you come to conclusions that are proper. You hold those things, hold them fast. Hold fast your feelings. He didn't say that. Hold fast your mama's feelings. Didn't say that. Hold fast your preacher's things. He didn't say that. Prove what's good, prove what's right, then hold those things. Let that make up who you are, he said. John 10:37-38. "If I do not the works of my Father, believe me not." What? "If I do not the works of my Father, believe me not. But if I do, though ye believe not me, believe the works. Believe the works that ye may know and believe that the Father is in me and I in him." You know what? You want to deny my words? Fine. Look at my works. Look at my deeds. Look at my miracles, he was saying. Remember John 20. What's the purpose of miracles? John 20, 30 and 31. To confirm the word. Which you might have thought the purpose of miracles was to heal people. False. Jesus said the purpose of miracles was to confirm the word of God. Now, were people healed by miracles? Of course they were. That was a secondary fact, a word that was very important to people who were ill, I know. But the main purpose of miracles was to confirm the word. That's why we had him. How about 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 6? 2 Peter 1:16. "For we have not followed cunningly devised fables when we made known unto you the power of the coming of the Lord, but we were eyewitnesses to his majesty." Peter says, "I didn't tell you stories I made up about Jesus. There weren't secondhand tales." He goes, "I'm telling you things I saw with my own eyes, things I heard with my own ears, are the things I told you. Not second, third hand. Peter said, we didn't make it up. You hear that today. Well, Jesus is just a myth or a fable that people got together and kind of made up a story that sounded good, and they spread that to the masses to control the masses. In fact, one person said recently, someone person that I kind of thought was reasonable until I heard him say this, that the Romans made Jesus up to control the people in the empire. If they could make up a Jewish Messiah to that region who said, live a certain way, do a certain thing, then maybe that would be helpful, and people would obey and be more reasonable, not rebel against the empire as much. Worked out, didn't it, for them? No. Turned out that that was their undoing. The idea of adopting Christianity as Romans was something that actually led to their destruction, ultimately. Now, a couple more things, the lesson's yours. While atheists correctly point out the illogical, blind faith of many Christians, the truth is that evidence actually disproves atheism and supports genuine Christianity. Now, I want to say this this is not a science class. I'm not going to turn it into one, I promise. But there's a couple things to consider here. We talked about the idea of faith and how faith comes. Right, faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God, Romans 10:17. Faith isn't a wish I have. Not just hope, it's based on the words of God and the evidence that God gives, right? You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free, John 8:32. John 8:32. So I see that there's truth, I gather, and I put it together, I prove it, and hold fast that which is good. Okay. When it comes to atheism, there's this thing called, you ready? The first law of thermodynamics. Now this says that energy or matter cannot be either created or destroyed. That when there's energy, it has to be has to go some other form. It just doesn't pop into existence or out of existence. It takes some other form, but energy is neither created nor destroyed. Now, if that's true, and that's by the way provable in science in labs all across the world, you can see examples of how that works. Converting one thing to another. For example, you have wood. Wood's energy locked up in a very specific form. How do you get the energy out of wood? You burn it, right? Now, when you burn wood, what can you do with the fire? It can keep you warm, right? What else can that energy locked up in wood do? I know you can put it under a steam engine, right? And the steam engine will cause water to boil. What's water do? Expands. And if in an engine, it causes the engine to rotate or the pistons to cycle. And you, from wood burning or coal burning, you can actually get a steam engine that goes faster. How about, for example, nuclear energy? Again, same idea. You tip water. The water then does what? Turns turbines, which gives you power, right? You get energy, one form to another form. That being the case, the idea of naturalistic atheism says that we're here now. Now, matter is not eternal, though, so how did we get here? Natural atheism can't tell you a thing. Now, you can't say, what about unnatural atheism? No such thing. You know why? Because atheism demands nothing beyond nature. So atheism says you got to come from somewhere. Where we come from, just believe me, you know. That's where it is. That's the idea, though. If you have a universe, where did the universe come from? All right? If there was ever absolutely nothing, if there was ever absolutely nothing, there would be nothing today as well. Because nothing doesn't produce everything. Nothing produces nothing. These basic questions really matter. They get you to think, okay, you think a man on the street without a degree can reason like that? Do you think it takes someone with an advanced degree in physics to realize there must be a God? No. Right? No. Someone off the street can say, where'd I come from? Your mom and daddy. Where'd they come from? Their mom and daddy. Where'd they come from? You go far, well, they had to come from somewhere, right? Had to be a star somewhere. What about that rock over there? Where'd that come from? Hmm. had to come from somewhere. What makes rocks? Volcanoes. Okay, where'd the volcano come from? I guess when the world was kind of forming together, it just kind of, where'd the stuff that made the world come from? Well, I guess we're around the sun, everything was kind of coming together around our sun, and these planets formed in, where'd the sun come from? Where'd the stuff that made the sun come from? Where'd all the matter that made our galaxy, where'd all the matter come from that made everything? Where'd it come from? Well, it just kind of happened. Again, that principle, that idea, when someone says it, that violates all scientific thought. All of it. So when it comes to where things come from, there must be an answer. So what's atheism demand? It demands a miracle, doesn't it? You see that? That itself denies atheism altogether. Now, what we say is, yes, you can't have nothing make nothing. There's a God that made. Where did God come from? Well, God says he's eternal, right? The difference between material things and God is, God being a spirit, spirit's eternal, different plane, different existence, and God being eternal in spirit made everything physical. So all physical things have a beginning. We know that. True, sure. But they came from someone who could make it. And furthermore, if you have matter, we have dead rocks and matter. Okay. What about all the intelligent things? Don't you have to have intelligence to create intelligence? One of the scariest things in the world right now is AI. There was a video online about 2 weeks ago now that you've heard of, you may not have heard of, but there is this division in Boston called the Advanced Robotics Division. I forget what it's called. Do you remember what it's called? Something Advanced Robotics. It's not like it comes from a comic book, but the thing is they're teaching these things to walk and move and swing bats and stuff, right? Again, purely automatic, right? They have these four-legged things, and they're taught to knock them over, and it shows how these four-legged commuters can basically rebalance themselves and go walking again. And they started putting guns in these things' hands for purely scientific reasons, right? And so they've actually had videos, and one source says it was fake, but they had guns in hands and how they were hitting targets, even when they were being hit and beat by their people trying to knock off the aim, they could still go back and find the target and hit it, right? AI. Who created the AI? Just happened? What did it take? Great intelligence to make that AI. It took a very scary mind to make that AI, for sure, right? But let's say those things are real and can really go around and shoot things and travel and get energy from the sun, things like that. I guess that's what we're all done for, right? But if that's real, if that really happened, then that means they take great intelligence to make that happen. So it took intelligence to make intelligent things happen. So if we're intelligent, if we can reason and think and prosper, then we also have to have a maker of the same or greater intelligence than we. Greater intelligence than we. And I thought there was one example I wanted to use. For example, let's say that the greatest ice cream in the flavor in the world is what? Jamocha almond fudge. If you disagree, you can be wrong about that, that's fine. But Jamocha almond fudge, the best ice cream in the world. Let's say I found that out maybe a month ago, right? Last month, I found out this is the best ice cream in the whole world. I've known it for a very long time, by the way. That's fine. Last month, it's great, best in the world. And every day for a month, let's say 3 months, I have a pint or two of Jamocha almond fudge. And I find myself on the scale like weighing 35 more pounds after a few months. And I go to the doctor, and he draws some blood tests and says, listen, your triglycerides are all out of whack here, and you've gained this weight. What's happened? Well, doc, I went and read a book at the library. Okay, that does make you gain that weight and have a bad blood test? Well, it might have been the ice cream. I've been eating ice cream every day for the last 3 months, and it's awesome. I love this flavor. Okay, well, that might be the connection, right? You have to have a cause that's sufficient that makes sense. For example, another example, let's say I found out last month about this best thing in the whole world, not beets because they're terrible, right? If you want to save the world, make beet ice cream, don't ever eat it, right? But let's say you have this Jamocha almond fudge ice cream, and I had it the first day, best flavor in the whole world. I have it for every day for a month. And into that month, World War III starts. Jim's fault, he started a new ice cream, you know. Would you say that? You would say, no, there has to be some connection here. You can't just make something up. And it has to be a cause that makes sense to the thing that happens. You just can't pull it out of the air. It has to be a sufficient cause, right? So I look at my life, my body, my complexity, my thought process, who I am, what I'm capable of. Do I have something that just happened? When I look at dead rocks and dirt, I say, that had to have a maker. When I look at me, I think also that had to have a maker. When it comes to these things that atheists come up with, atheists point out that some Christians have blind faith. They're right, some Christians do. Some Christians have this idea of that faith just because I want it to happen, not that it really did happen. Because mama said, though, not because it did happen. Because of what I want. Now, listen, this happens all the time when it comes to our own faith. Remember in the parable of the soils? You had four types. There actually one was just the wayside. The seed never took hold. And it was in Luke chapter 8. I skipped some stuff. In Luke chapter 8, though, you have the idea there's the wayside. Then chapter 8, verse 13, there's the soil that fell on the rock. And they which, when they hear, receive the word with joy and have not the root, which for a while believe and in time of temptation fall away, verse 14. And they which fell among the thorns are they which, when they have heard, go forth and are choked with the cares and riches of the world, bring no fruit to, therefore to perfection. Verse 15, but on the good ground are they, which fall on the good ground are they, which in an honest and good heart, having heard the word, keep it and bring forth fruit with patience. Now, when you sow the seed, you can't know where the seed's going to, you can't know what kind of soil you're sowing into. Right? You can't know that. You can't know until you sow. So some soils are not good soils. And one of the things we really need to talk about at some point, not really tonight, is some soils change over time. They're more concerned really about other things, more concerned about their own pleasure or their own wants and needs versus what the Bible actually says. Happens a lot. So soils can change over time. We sow the seed because we don't know what kind of soil is going to be found by the seed. And it could be, as a matter of fact, that it could be that you sow the soil in some seed, or sow the seed in some soil sometime, and that may not be found, that may not take root at the time, but maybe later it can. So maybe time passes, maybe their life changes in some way, that they weren't receptive now, but they would be next time. That happens too. So the soil which rejected the seed at first may at later time receive the seed and have a good soil or good growth from that and produce much fruit. You never know. You never know. Our job is just simply to sow the seed. But the points that are made here by the atheists are not to be just ignored. And just because there are some bad Christians doesn't mean the fact that all Christians don't exist. I thought about this. Some people have short hair that are men. And some people let the hair grow out and grow shaggy mustaches, for example. And looks great, son. I'd just like to tease you. Or grow long, thick beards, for example. I wish I could grow a beard. I can't grow a beard, you know. Now, if I grew a long, thick beard, would that prove there were no razors in existence? Would that prove that I chose not to use one, right? The fact that my son has longer hair than he was this high and all had a buzz cut, right? There are pictures we can show you. And so just because he has longer hair doesn't mean that barbers don't exist. Doesn't mean there are no clippers. It means he just want clippers on his head right now. That's all it means. So when it comes to people rejecting Christ and not living right, doesn't mean it's impossible. Doesn't mean God doesn't exist. Just means they've rejected to not go to the barber, if you will. Not use the razor, if you will. If we use the razor, if we go to the barber, our lives turn out much better. But only accept those things you know from the evidence and truth, not things you're told by someone who is charismatic or is handsome or is whatever. there's things parents tell us that aren't always true. And sometimes our parents tell these things because they like us, they love us. My mother loved me, and I was convinced there was a Santa Claus for years. Santa Claus real? No. Now, I know that was told to me to make my young life more enjoyable, but is there a Santa Claus? No. But my mama told me there was. Why? She thought she was doing good. I mean, it's just a little story you tell your kids, it's fine. My point is, though, our parents aren't always the most trustworthy thing, but especially about things they don't know about. Things of eternity, for example. If my mother had died and come back and said, son, I've been in the afterlife for 10 years and I've come back to talk to you, and these things about heaven and hell are real and they're true, that's one thing. The Bible's still right regardless of what she says. But the fact is, she's never been to beyond and back. Right? She can't tell me because she'd never been there before. She never experienced these things of eternity before. So she can't tell me what's right and wrong about it. She may want to help me, but she just doesn't know. So when it comes to what people know and tell us about things that are atheistic or wrong, these things, sometimes some things atheists tell us are true. We just have to be able to not throw the baby out with the bathwater, know that we have to rely on God's word regardless overall. So I appreciate you being here tonight and you helping me get through this with my tongue not working like it should. But these things are things we should consider about atheism. Some things atheists say are right. How do you know? Think about it. Are some Christians not authentic? Sure. That's one of them. That's one of the things that we're told to be careful of those things. Some Christians are what they need to be, for example. Sometimes there's hypocrisy among Christians. That's true also. And sometimes Christians don't evangelize like they should. But we can help that, can't we? I want to encourage you. You don't have to be an evangelist to go to heaven. You don't have to be someone who has a Bible study every week to go to heaven. Of course not. That's silly. But if you have someone in your life you want to hear you see obey the gospel, I'll tell you what you can do. You can pray for them. You can hand them a track. You can invite them to church, especially our friends' days, right? We're having those more often now. Invite them to that. The things we can do if we really love people's souls. So if you have a need tonight to respond to the invitation, if this is your opportunity, and if you want to ask more about obeying the gospel and learn what it takes to be a Christian via God's plan, we can help you with that too. If you need tonight, would you please come as we sing this hymn.